Funding for WPLN News comes from you, our listeners, and Bernstein Private Wealth, working with creators and innovators to invest with intention and build the legacy they want to leave behind. More at Bernstein.com.
I'm LaTanya Turner, and this is Nashville. Today, we are hosting one of our reporter roundups with student reporters. It's never too early to start as a journalist and writer, and today's guests are young people who are dedicated to sharing stories that inform and engage their communities on campus and beyond. Joining us to start are Montgomery Bell Academy 8th grader Nick Held and James Lawson High School senior Grace Chen. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nick, you're 14, so you're the youngest student
us
today. Might as well establish that right up front. But you really are an example, based on what you've told us, of someone who is eager to write, even at a young age. Your teachers told us that you are the most active and prolific writer of your class. Is that true?
I like to think it is.
Well, that's high praise coming from teachers. You are editing a current issue of your school-run publication, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
It's called Top of the Hill.
That's right.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about Top of the Hill.
Well, Top of the Hill used to be a magazine that's pre-COVID era. But when COVID hit, it kind of went into a online magazine. So after COVID, when kids started to go back to school, a lot of the Top of the Hill writers wanted it to be more of a real copy that they wanted to actually pick up and read. So instead of turning it back into a magazine, what they did was turned it into a kind of, a bunch of articles, but it kind of had like a comic book feel. And especially since our goal is to kind of give it to middle schoolers, having a comic book look, that's what really like drags them to it and makes them want to look through it and read through it. And it's shown successful so far.
Is it still also digital?
There are digital copies online, I believe.
Okay. For people who may not know, I know a little bit about MBA, but for people who may not know, tell us about the name, because the hill is significant for that school.
Yes, ma'am. Top of the Hill. What it just means is the hill is the nickname that we call the school. Just a lot of students refer to it as the hill. So Top of the Hill is just referring to how we are just on top of the hill. And, you know, it's a pretty fitting name.
Yes, it is fitting. Thanks for explaining that. So how did you get started writing?
Well, I remember it was my 7th grade year. My teacher, Miss Overton, was handing back tests, and there's an essay part on the test, and she handed it back to me, and she said, "Nick, you are an amazing writer. You are very good at this. There's a Top of the Hill, like a magazine for junior schoolers. I suggest that you join it because you are just really good."
And what did you think when you heard that?
Still, I am very much like, wow, thank you. And
you don't know your own strength yet.
No. And so I showed up to the next meeting and I found out that it was just this amazing just newspaper where you can write whatever you want about. You can do whatever you want. You can write a poem. You can write a short story. You could interview someone. You could just do normal journalism. It is just, and I really loved it. Okay. And so I just kept doing it, and now I'm here, and this is, I think, the last issue that I can do is coming out soon, because I'm going into my freshman year next year.
So you're moving to high school, so that's why it's the last issue, just to clarify. It's not the last issue.
Not the last issue. The last issue for me.
Okay. All right. We're going to hear some of your work, creative work, in a few minutes, but I want to bring Grace in. You're a senior, and you're a contributor to the school's paper, The Lightning Letter, right?
Yes, ma'am.
I took a look at the online site, and it's pretty impressive. A lot going on there. How did you discover your interest in journalism?
So I've always been, before I got into journalism, my teacher Miss Daniels. She was the one that did journalism. However, I was always in her AP classes. But one day she approached me and she was like, Grace, do you have any interests in editing or publishing your work? And I was like, sure, I'll give it a thought, some thought. And so time went on, and then she asked me again in my, I believe, towards the end of my junior year going into senior year. She's like, well, Grace, I've seen your AP research paper. That's really, really interesting. I think more people should read about it. And so I was like, hey, yeah, sure, maybe I'll give journalism or publishing my work a shot. And that's how it began.
With your AP paper, research paper.
Yeah.
And tell us about your AP research paper. What was it about?
So my AP research paper was about the physical and mental impact of sugar consumption in teenagers and how that impacted their work ethic and their readiness to learn in school.
Okay. Did people want to hear that message?
Maybe not.
Sugar's pretty popular with teenagers.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about it, though.
So basically, in my research, I found out that eating sugar, even though it gives you that momentary like caffeine boost or the energy boost that many people need, it actually doesn't help you at all. And so maybe an hour after
shocking.
So like maybe an hour after you eat a piece of candy, you start feeling like, oh, I'm a little sleepy or I'm a little tired. So it's probably not great that teachers give out candy as a reward.
Okay. All right. It also had to do with genetically modified food as well, right?
Yes, okay. Genetically modified food. Like, there is a lot of food in the supermarket that's actually genetically modified, and we're not aware. So, like, these tangerine cuties that we always eat, they're genetically modified. Chicken that we buy, genetically modified. And other produce and fresh fruits.
Yes.
So
I'm curious what the reaction to your article was.
A lot of people were shocked.
Really?
A lot of teachers were like, Grace, where'd you find this niche topic about genetically modified foods? And I was like, well, I was eating an orange one day and I saw the GMO sticker. And, you know, if I have to write a paper for a year, then that's what I'll look into.
Started with eating an orange. But what about your peers? What kind of reaction did you get there from other students?
So I think after the study I did with 12 of my peers in my research paper, they've all stopped eating sugar for a time, and then they went back. But
really?
It made them realize that what they eat actually really affects them as a whole person. And so they were more careful about, like, their diets. So they would more likely go to, like, Whole Foods instead of, like, a Walmart or My Name brands, because sometimes those genetically modified items actually affect hormones and it affects growth.
That's pretty impressive that you had an impact on your peers with writing this article. How did that make you feel?
It made me feel inspired to continue.
Good.
So that's what kept me in journalism after that.
Very interesting. We're going to hear more from you about some of your work in a minute. Nick, Top of the Hill, you've explained, publishes student pieces,
yes,
creative
ma'am.
Writing, and some of them have been your own. Poems, plays, and play reviews and interviews. We'd love for you to read one of your poems. So would you share one that was published in Top of the Hill with us?
Yeah. So this one is called Love You, Oh, I've Tried. It's kind of a sad one because I like sad poetry. But here. I've continued to roam my now silent home, reminiscing my love I used to feel for you. I sit and look at pictures of us before we had grown, and I still feel the love I had tried to. I remember us together and find us apart. I still feel your touch on my now cold heart. I try to face the truth that makes me hurt. I still remember that night where we first began to flirt. Flirt with the idea of a new love to form, breaking my heart and making me reborn. Why have you moved on so fast and me so slow? Why have you removed on past and my? Why have you removed our past and me not letting go? Love you, oh, I've tried, and I will not stop trying. For you, my girl, I will die, and I will not stop dying.
Sad.
Yeah.
You're so young to have that kind of heartbreak.
Yeah.
So do you often write about relationships?
Not really. I just like writing about sad things.
Where did that idea come from, if you don't mind sharing?
Well, it just kind of came from I've always been very interested in kind of like the human mind and what goes on in the human mind and how your brain works and whatnot. And I've always been interested in the feeling of just sadness and heartbreak and things like that and how that works.
Can we assume that this is not necessarily based on a personal heartbreak?
No.
I'm glad to know.
Thank you. This is more just kind of a way to express emotions without actually like just speaking words. Instead, you can write it down and have people read it and just be like, oh, nice.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, this is Nashville, and I'm your host, LaTanya Turner. We're talking this hour with young student journalists. With us now is Nick Held, a middle schooler at Montgomery Bell Academy, and Grace Chin, a senior at James Lawson High School. Grace, for the Lightning Letter, which is the school newspaper at James Lawson High, what kind of stories are you working on? You told us about your AP research paper and how that inspired you to continue to write. So tell me a little bit about what you write about, and do you have a beat?
Yeah, so now moving on from research papers, I've decided to write about articles that just update schools on what's happening at the different conferences that our students attend or what's generally going on. And a lot of what's posted on the Lightning Letter is actually student work, poetry, stories, and sports updates, because that's what we found to be pretty popular with our students. And so I attend a lot of conferences myself. That's why I like to write about these conferences. So our school participates in a lot of extracurricular activities, and I felt like by getting those articles out and letting people know that these conferences exist, like what students do at these conferences, what our school gets recognized for, it motivates our student bodies to join more extracurricular activities that ultimately make them stand out. And that's where I come in. I love seeing students going out there and adding on to their resumes and having that experience. So I like to see other students shine. And that's what inspires me to write my articles.
Very noble. Public service journalism already. And it sounds like you're having a lot of influence with your peers.
Yes. So DECA is known as a business competition that high schools across the nation participate in. And we just had our state conference in February of this year. And before we started publishing and getting the word out that we existed as a club at our school, there were only 20 students in the club. We started off 20 students last year, but this year at DECA, we brought over 50 students to the conference.
Wow. That's in part due to your writing. Good work. Nick, you are sharing some pretty poignant and moving works in Top of the Hill. Some people would be hesitant to share some of their personal thoughts and creative writing. Tell me a little bit about how you feel about sharing your work with your classmates and community.
Well, originally when I started writing stuff like this, I was a little hesitant to, because, you know, especially in this middle school era of your life, people are very judgmental and people don't really know what to think about other people's feelings and whatnot. But I've kind of just found that if you put yourself out there and if you express who you really are, the people that are judging you for that are just the people that don't know themselves. Or the people that are the most, you know, insecure. And it's, I found it's very comforting when people do read it and people agree with me, or people see that, you know, they're not alone. And I really love that.
Good. What would you say to other students who aren't sure about joining a student newspaper or publication?
I would say it is a great experience. You don't have to be the best writer. I know that it's taught me so much. I've met a lot of great friends through it. It has given me so many good experiences, and that's only been in like 2 years of being a part of it. Okay. And if a student asked me if they should join, I would say absolutely.
Very good. Grace, we have like maybe 10 seconds. What would you say?
Absolutely. Do it. Even if you're just looking for something to do, you've never don't knock it until you try it. Journalism may sound boring to some students, but it is life-changing once you get into it. And you can never leave after.
Great. Thank you so much. I am so glad that you took time to talk to us, Nick and Grace. And we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk with a college podcaster and a couple of editors about their work. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Tanya Turner, and this is Nashville. Today, we're talking with student journalists about their work and how they do it. The thirst for news is huge these days, and Nashville has its fair share of high-profile news media outlets, including us here at WPLN, and this is Nashville. But bubbling under, there's a news ecosystem that we don't often hear about, even though it's producing the next generation of journalists. We're talking with some of them in this segment, a great group of college student journalists. Shamani Salahuddin is a senior at MTSU and the current student assistant lifestyles editor at MTSU's paper, Sidelines. Robert Lakatosh is a Tennessee Tech sophomore and a finalist in the NPR Student Podcast Challenge. And Maya Taylor, a senior at TSU, is the editor-in-chief of TSU student publication, The Meter. Shamani, Robert, and Maya, welcome to This is Nashville. We're so glad to have you with us today. Well, we have a lot to talk about, and I can tell you all have a lot to say because I've read some of your work and know about it. Shamani, let's start with you. You took an interest in journalism in high school, you told us, and you're currently majoring in journalism at MTSU, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So this is a big question to start with, but what is the job of a journalist?
What is the job of a journalist? I think the job of a journalist is just to reflect the stories of people in your community and serve them with information that they can't get themselves.
Okay, that's good. So the publication, The Sidelines, is available to your community. And how do you make sure that what you contribute is serving that community the way you just described?
Yes. So as lifestyles editor, I focus most on entertainment and music, film. And so what I try to do is reflect the arts on our campus and showcase student artists that may not get that kind of press or highlighted like that on our community. And even shining a light in the places that aren't as highlighted on our campus. So like songwriting students or the theater program, film majors, that kind of thing.
Okay. Very good. Robert, let's talk about your work. You're a sophomore at Tennessee Tech and the finalist in the NPR Student Podcast Challenge. That's a pretty big honor.
Thank you.
Your podcast, The Fluid Dynamics of Coffee, is one of 10 finalists out of more than 500 entries in the NPR Challenge. So we're going to hear some of that in a minute. But did you have any experience in podcasting or audio and sound design prior to entering that contest?
Yeah, I had my own podcast when I was in high school. Started it with my sister in 2020, kind of when everybody had a lot of time to do stuff, so we decided to start a podcast. It was called The History Of, and it was really the history of kind of giving a timeline of different things. So like for one episode, I talked about the history of snowboarding or the history of space trash, really whatever kind of felt interesting. And then I went to community college, Pellissippi State, to pursue a degree in audio engineering, and I'm currently finishing up that degree now. So, yeah, I have a background in audio and podcasting.
Okay. So for this challenge, you created one particular podcast. Are you continuing to do a recurring podcast at this time?
I do not have a podcast now. That was kind of a one-time thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll come back to that in a minute. Maya, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're a senior at TSU, editor-in-chief of The Meter. That's the student publication. You're kind of a legacy journalist. Both your parents worked in broadcasting. Your mom worked in news media for News Channel 5. Your dad worked in radio for a little while. And full disclosure here, fun fact, I've known your mom, Nasa, for years, since the days when we both worked at WSMV Channel 4. So what did you learn about journalism from growing up and seeing the day-to-day work of your parents?
Well, I was lucky enough that growing up, I was able to sometimes come with my mother to work, like after school at News Channel 5. And it was such a wonderful experience because at the time, obviously, as a child, you don't know much about news or journalism or anything like that. You're just a kid. But being able to see how much passion my mother and her coworkers had towards like just giving information out to people and being able to be the first ones to tell people the news that's going on in their community was a lot more important than I realized then, but I realize how important it is now.
Well, I can certainly vouch for the fact that you had some great role models there. But tell us about you getting involved with the meter, because it was, even though you're a journalism major, or mass communications, I guess, it was a little unusual how you got involved because the student paper was kind of struggling, right?
Yes. So I joined as editor-in-chief last year, so that would be spring of 23. I got in a call from my now advisor, Professor Sandra Long Weaver, and she had heard from both my mother and honestly a few of my teachers on campus that I was a good writer, and she had asked if I wanted this leadership position. And at first I was a bit unsure because I had never held a leadership position before, but I thought it was such an amazing opportunity. So of course I said yes, and it was kind of just bringing back as much as I could with like connecting with TSU and the students, because it was a little disconnected after COVID hit, unfortunately. And so I tried to move as quick as possible. So she had asked for 8 writers, or at least 4 minimum. And by the end of the first day, I had 8 writers already signed up.
Oh my goodness. You must have some pull on that campus. There is some power in the pen. Are you finding that to be the case?
Very much so. I connect now with almost all 86 organizations on campus. So I'm constantly, I have a separate notebook for everything involving the meter. Whenever I'm walking around on campus, I'm always keeping an eye out on anything that could be newsworthy. And I'm quick to just, hey, here's my email. I'd love to write an article about you if you ever have the time to sit down. Anything along those lines.
Okay. You mentioned COVID, and you're a senior, and as the editor, you often write opinion pieces, and you shared with us that you have recently written one. I'm not even sure whether it's published yet, but we might have a scoop in hearing it, because I want you to share some of it. It's kind of a reflection on your 4 years at TSU as someone who started as a freshman at the height of COVID. So read us a little excerpt from that.
Of course. What a difference 4 years has made. When I walk around the yard, I can see the magic that my parents spoke about. The freshmen are able to experience a campus that is vibrant and welcoming. I know that the drama of 2020 caught us all by surprise and forced the school's administration to pivot and quickly create a new way of operating. But we would be lying if we didn't acknowledge that it was a much different feel. And I can't help but be a bit envious. It's like I and my other classmates are a bit removed from the magic of TSU. Please understand, I love TSU and the wonderful people I've met there, but my love is a bit muted compared to others. But I am trying to change that. In this last year of my collegiate undergraduate experience, I am trying to lean into all of the social opportunities the school offers. I may have had a slower start, but I plan to finish with a flourish. It's what my dad would have wanted, and more importantly, it's what I want as well.
Great. That, and you're getting ready to graduate, right?
Yes.
So did you have something that you wanted people to take from that? Because a lot of times editorials are to promote some sort of action on the part of the readers or the listeners. Did you have something in mind there?
When I wrote the editorial, I wanted people to realize that COVID hit every aspect of every community. But for me, who is now going to be the class of 2024 graduating, I lost my senior year and was stuck at home for months. And
so then your senior year of high school.
Yes, my senior year of high school. And was at home for months like everyone else in the shutdown. And then when I was given this opportunity to go on campus, this, I had always been told about like the beauty of TSU and the community and the bustling, like just network of campus, that like network that was there on campus. And to go on a campus when it was kind of eerily quiet because everybody was at home due to COVID, kind of forced you to connect with the people that were around you And that's when I realized when the next class came in the next year that there was a large difference in what I had experienced as a freshman when campus was closed versus what the newest freshmen were experiencing.
Mm-hmm. And are you trying to get people to be more involved on campus and not let that deter them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. People have asked me before, like, how did you try and pick the pace back up once COVID was over? And I've told them that now that COVID has since technically ended, it kind of makes you want to, like, pick up on what you have missed. And so it makes you want to, not being able to experience regular life makes you realize the average things that you miss, like the community and being able to be around so many people with similar ideals to you. And like I said, with networking with 86 organizations, I am constantly being able to talk to new people who have had completely different experiences than me. So it makes me more excited to encourage others to just reach out, because we've seen that, like, our way of life can be snatched away within, like, a second.
Yes, very important message. We all experience that. If you're just tuning in, this is Nashville, and I'm your host, LaTanya Turner. We're talking this hour with college students who are reporters, editors, and podcasters on their campuses. And Robert, as we mentioned, you are a finalist in the NPR Student Podcast Challenge with your podcast, The Fluid Dynamics of Coffee. Mm-hmm. We want to hear a little bit about what you have produced. But first, tell us where this idea came from to take a deep dive into coffee.
This is kind of an idea that I came up with maybe a year ago, just for something that would be kind of an interesting question to ask for a podcast, and a question that I haven't really seen fully answered online, something that felt fresh. So that's something I came up with a year ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Let's take a listen. We have a clip from your podcast.
A good number of us start the morning with a good cup of coffee. Maybe a little cream, a little sugar. Whatever you put in your coffee, you'll likely have to stir it. Okay, just hang with me for a second. Imagine how much more efficient your life could be if you knew exactly the fastest way to stir your coffee. Okay, admittedly, maybe not that much more efficient, but I still want to find out. My search for an answer starts with a hypothesis, so I asked around for the most common ways that people stir their coffee. How do you stir your coffee?
Like, if you're making a latte, the way you do it, it stirs itself.
No, I go up and down.
Like a tornado?
With my finger.
In circles.
In a circle.
Just a circle?
Yeah, a little circle.
Just in a circle.
You scoop from the bottom to bring it up, pop from the top.
I haven't thought about this. Okay, so the majority answer is by far circular stirring, but there are definitely still a variety of answers here. So I decided to test each one. Every time I made coffee each morning, I decided to test each stirring method and measure how quickly the cream dissolved each time. I poured a set amount of cream into a set amount of coffee, set a timer, and stirred until the coffee appeared homogeneous. And the winner? Figure eight. And that's just a closed case, right? I mean, we could just end the show right here. But I brought the results to Dr. Andrew Dickerson, a professor of fluid dynamics at the University of Tennessee. And this is where I learned that my experiment was actually a terrible way to test my hypothesis.
Your initial conditions in that particular experiment are, again, affected by how that creamer is poured in there, and even if you're trying to do it the same way every time, mm-hmm. That is a process that can't be duplicated.
And this is what makes fluid dynamics problems so impossible.
Robert, you made me wake up and smell the coffee. I will not think of coffee the same way. I love to drink coffee. So that is very interesting. And figure eight is not something I've ever thought about in terms of stirring. Mm-hmm. But such a creative idea, and the way you produce that, you know, as a broadcast journalist, I can tell some of the production features in mm-hmm. there, like the waterfall with the interviews from different people about how they do this. Tell mm-hmm. me what kind of thought went into producing the podcast the way you did.
I mean, yeah, there are a lot of subtle things you can put together to kind of bring home your point, but I had to be really careful to not do things that would be distracting or kind of show off in any sort of unnecessary way. So, like, the music is, like, super fast-paced. The music, like, sounds caffeinated. Or even in the montage where people are saying circle, it's like panned in a circle. So sort of meta things like that, that you kind of register subconsciously, but don't really, aren't consciously distracting.
When, now, this is a finalist in the NPR College Podcast Channel Challenge, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, I can tell it's very well done. When will you know about who the winner is?
I don't know. An announcement was going to be made at the beginning of this month. I kind of figured that if they haven't told me by now, I probably didn't win. My assumption is that somebody has won and they're doing interviews now, and that'll come out later this month. But really, I don't know.
Maybe you can do a little investigative sleuthing and find out if you won. But if not, maybe there's a way we can make sure our listeners get to hear the whole thing somehow. Mm-hmm. We'll talk after the show. How about that?
Okay.
Okay, Shimani, you recently wrote an article about MTSU's Color the Runway show. Tell us about that assignment and what Color the Runway is.
Yes. So this assignment was sparked actually from my advanced reporting class, and our assignment was to go onto campus, find something newsworthy to talk about, and write an enterprising article about it. So Color the Runway has been a staple on MTSU's campus for the Black community for years, since 2017. And I always had an interest in it. And then earlier, before the show was produced, the organization came out and said that it would be the last one. So
This year's.
This February. Mm-hmm. So that really kind of sparked it even more. I was like, this is newsworthy, this almost like institution for the Black community on MTSU's campus is ending. And what is that going to look like afterwards as well?
Okay. So you chose to write about it, and you have an excerpt of the article you wrote. Read a little bit of it to us.
After 7 years of success, Color the Runway, a student-run Black History Month fashion show, put on its last production February 16th. The show, called Muse, culminated the determination, sweat, and tears of the formidable runway team and models from 2017 to 2024. The high-energy ballroom reached capacity with the number of guests set at 1,000. Screams and applause overflowed from the audience for every model that strutted down the runway, and team members got emotional watching the tradition come to an end. "Oh, I'm sad. We were really sad about it," Annie Woodard, Muse director, said, giggling. "It sucks because I feel like there were so many new students who just found out about it, and people were saying that they were going to audition next year." Woodard would love to see the production continue, but understands why it's ending, she said. The first Black History Month fashion show was Johnson's brainchild, but many names built the production into what it is today. Color the Runway began as a grassroots project of creative minds combining resources to simply put on a good show. Now, the founders, the first student team to foster the production, are all in their late 20s to 30s with jobs, and some even have families. Without them on campus, it's a challenge to maintain the show's primary intentions: produce a fashion show that celebrates Black history and culture, and create a safe space for Black students, artists, and creatives on campus.
Wow. So that is an example of a great newsworthy topic that you chose to write about, but it also has the potential to bring about some change. What has been the reaction to the article? And do you think it'll have any impact on Color the Runway?
Yeah. So I don't know if there has been any impact, I guess, on a bigger scale on MTSU's campus. This was a student organization that was just kind of a passion project for them, and they created the safe space for students. I know that we do have other Black student organizations on campus that are putting on events, but there's nothing to the scale as Color the Runway was.
Okay. Have you heard anything about what's going to happen next with the project?
No, nothing.
Okay. Maybe there's a follow-up.
Yeah.
That's a big part of journalism that sometimes people forget about, following up to your reporting.
Yes.
So just let me quickly go around and ask you each, maybe for about 15 seconds. Maya, let's start with you. Do you intend to continue to pursue journalism after graduation?
Yes.
I was actually lucky enough last summer to be able to work for, do an internship for News Channel 5, which was such an amazing experience since I had grown up around such wonderful news like that as well. But I would love to always stay focused in news. My dream, honestly, is to make, honestly, a news channel of some sort for Gen Z, because we really, unfortunately, we are connected to our phones 24/7, but I feel like we don't know enough about the world around us. And if there was a way to connect to my generation, that would be amazing.
All right. Awesome. What about you, Robert?
In some capacity, I would say yes. I think, maybe working for a podcast or a radio station would be a really cool opportunity that I would like to see in the future.
Okay. And Shamani?
Yes, I definitely plan to pursue journalism after graduation. In what medium that looks like, I don't know, because journalism is shifting so much in this day and age. But I will always keep telling stories, and that will be part of my future.
That you are so right, and that's a good statement to end on. I will just let our listeners know that there is a link to Robert's podcast on our website, The Fluid Dynamics of Coffee, and we also have links to all of the publications of the students that we're talking to today. So thank you all for joining us. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll keep the conversation going with some of our guests about the ins and outs of working as a student journalist. Join the conversation by tweeting us at This Is Nashville. We'll be right back. I'm LaTanya Turner, and this is Nashville. Today, we're talking with student journalists, hearing from them about their own work as well as what it's like to report on their campuses. Joining us to continue the conversation, James Lawson High School senior and student newspaper reporter Grace Chen, MTSU senior and assistant lifestyles editor of Sidelines, Shamani Salahuddin, and TSU senior and editor-in-chief of The Meter, Maya Taylor. Thank you all for staying with us for this segment. I certainly know the work that goes into being a journalist and the effort and time commitment there is for that particular work, which you all are doing as students in an age when probably a lot of your peers are on TikTok and Facebook and they're doing their own personal content creation. So why are you writing for your school communities instead of just writing for yourself and your own social media? And Grace, let's start with you.
All right. So I like to write about students and just different opportunities throughout school because I feel as if it just gives everyone a chance to get out there and embrace the school culture, know that we have a school culture outside of social media. Because I know that we're all stuck on our phones and Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever holds our attention span for a little while. But what about the activities that you could participate in that will fulfill your school experience? And I mean, even though high school is just a step into college, what about maximizing being a high schooler? Going to conferences, having overnight trips to Chattanooga or Knoxville or just the capital here. I like to write about that because it gives students the chance to know that these opportunities exist. They can participate in these activities to get themselves out.
Okay. Maya, what about you?
My mother has always said that the reason she loves writing is because she loves being a storyteller. And I feel like I really connected with that because despite the fact that TSU has so many organizations, there's a few connections that are able to like bridge the gap between each organization based off of their ideals. But we all share a lot of similarities though. And that's what I really wanted to have campus connect with, because before I started writing, as I'm looking for article ideas, I usually speak to students and I'm like, oh, do you know about this happening with this organization? And sometimes their response is, I don't even know who that organization is. And I'm like, perfect. There's another way to keep students informed. And also when a student is reading that article, they could think like, I really like what this organization has going on. Let me find out more about that. And it's able to also connect students to the community we have, because being in college is kind of a home away from home, and you're able to build your own community, or as my mother says, find your tribe. And so mm-hmm. to be able to do that, like Rachel said, you have to be able to put yourself out there for all of these experiences and all of the ups and downs. And so doing journalism is able to just connect the dots of like a full big picture.
So impressed to hear that. Shamani, why are you writing for your campus community as opposed to just focusing on your own personal thing?
So for me, journalism, my favorite part of journalism is sitting down with someone and connecting with people, and especially on a campus as big as MTSU is, and we have, you know, commuter students, you don't get to meet everybody on that campus. And so being a part of the paper gives me an opportunity to meet people I otherwise wouldn't have met if this wasn't my job.
Let's talk some about the standards for the publications that you all write for. What kind of guidelines, Shamani, are there for the MTSU sidelines, would you say? How would you describe your publication or journalistic standards?
Expand on the question, I'm sorry.
Yeah, is there any kind of mission statement or objective that the publication follows or that you follow as mm-hmm. one of the contributors?
Yeah, I think consistently across all of our sections, news and sports and lifestyles, is just showcasing the talent and the minds on our campus, for our students on our campus. Okay. I would say that's the main mission. Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Grace?
So our publication tries to remain unbiased. So we try and not inject our own opinion into these writings. We just want to tell the story and let people read that story and take away what they think it means.
And is there any strategy that you use for doing that? Because clearly you have strong opinions. We all do. How do you maintain that objectivity?
So I myself try to focus on the facts. What is actually, you know, established, agreed upon, instead of saying, oh, here's what I think this does. Mm-hmm. I'll just do my research first. Research is very important. Mm-hmm. And so I'll do my research first. I make sure that I know background of it. And then I actually speak to the teachers or the advisors that are in charge of it. And I actually ask them for the hard facts. And I just stick to the facts.
Okay. All right. Sometimes that's challenging in this day and age, so I admire your commitment to that. Maya, as the editor-in-chief, how does the meter go about choosing topics to cover?
I always, because I currently have 13 writers that write for the newspaper, and a lot of them are part of their own organization, so I do give them the opportunity to kind of spotlight their organizations if they're not as well-known on campus. But I also try and, for papers, live in the moment or at least review the moment. So if it's a full week of like back-to-back different organizations doing something, we'll review over like the week overall, or like the student's favorite, we'll ask around. And also I do love personal interviews as well with people, because it also sometimes organizations with their size sometimes seem like they're not focused on the goals that campus needs to focus on. But it's actually when you're able to sit down with one person from the organization, you see that they're still focused on like maintaining their ideals and helping other people on campus. And I usually try and, for the meter, we write about issues that are, or events on campus that are focused towards the African-American community, African-American students, and HBCU students in the Nashville area. So anything that really connects to it, even if it's not for Tennessee State University, if something happens at Fisk, it could have a direct correlation to something that's happened at Tennessee State University. So I try and make sure that at least the perspective is coming, like can be read by African-American students who can relate to the experiences.
That's very interesting the way you phrase that, because you and Shamani both have talked about writing articles that feature communities of color
on your campuses, within your campus community. And our listeners can look online eventually and see your photos, but you can't see us right now. But all three women are women of color that I happen to be speaking with today. So what kind of discussions do you have? Let's go to you, Shamani, about minority voices and elevating those voices racially, ethnically, or otherwise on campus in the publication.
What kind of
discussions or strategies do you have about elevating those voices?
I think that at Sidelines, we're always trying to, diversity is a big value at our publication. And I think as a Black woman on our staff, I don't want to say that it's like automatically my responsibility to do that, but I think that just it's a personal connection that I have, especially being on a predominantly white campus. Not a lot of our stories are told, and it's not always, you know, something that's on the front page of our campus website or anything. So I think that it's just important to value sharing those stories, because who else is going to tell them if not you?
And maybe it's a matter of trying to include those perspectives in stories in general. Yes. Like you said, you don't want to always feel like you have that obligation to mm-hmm. be that mouthpiece, but those perspectives being included in any reporting you do.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. What about you, Grace? How do you approach elevating voices that might not normally be heard?
So Lawson's pretty diverse, so we've always had this diverse community that we could write about. But I feel like student voice isn't always heard at Lawson. And what we do is we go out into school communities and we actually write about student opinions and what students think, or maybe just like what we think should happen at the school. And so by writing these articles, pushing them out, printing them on paper, putting them on Instagram, digitalizing all of that, I feel like we give students power to express it, not directly to maybe administrators or our principals, but in some way or form that they're going to come upon it and they're going to hear about it.
It's interesting that you said student voices aren't always heard. So how do you handle or do you experience pushback sometimes from administration?
So I feel like we don't experience like a pushback that we really feel, but it's about sometimes students having their own opinions on certain things and they aren't addressed.
Okay.
And so there's just certain events that maybe students want to have, or like a club that we want to have. It's not always approved or created. And so we help these students get their thoughts out on paper and having that pushed onto the lightning letter. So maybe it'll it'll gain support and momentum. Okay. To be noticed.
Okay. What about you, Maya? You have support from the administration? Do you sometimes have to deal with pushback as an editor?
Surprisingly, I don't usually have to deal with pushback, because everything that's been written is usually based off of a majority of students' opinions. And sometimes administration realizes that their experience or what they're witnessing at TSU is completely different from a student experiencing what the administration has had set in stone. And for me, I'm lucky enough that I go to an HBCU where, as an African-American woman, all I see on campus is usually people who look like me.
Yeah.
And so it's nicer to be able to create news that's not just either negative news that's portraying people of color or the African-American community in a negative light, or having it be a positive note, but it's just always the first Black woman does this or the first Black man does that. For the meter, we try and focus on just regular students, like spotlighting students, organizations that have done great work within the African-American community surrounding Nashville and surrounding the Jefferson area that we're in. And like I said, it's really nice to be able to create news that you wouldn't see on a regular news channel or here on a radio station, because sometimes it feels like we are forced to stick to the same script. Mm-hmm. But being able to control the narrative on campus is being able to have students realize what's going on around them. And also, when students agree with what you have written, that's mm-hmm. when I really feel like I've gotten the point across, because I've had a student come up to me and was like, you know, I've had issues with this too, and I thought I was completely alone. And like, I met three other people who are going through the same issue. And it's able, like I said earlier, to just connect all of the dots.
Awesome. You all have been so refreshing to speak with, and the next generation of journalism is in great hands. Thank you for joining us, Grace, Shamani, and Maya. It's so wonderful to have all these student journalists in our studio. Nick Held, Grace Chin, Shamani Salahuddin, Robert Lakatosh, and Maya Taylor. Thanks for tuning in this hour. This is Nashville is a production of Nashville Public Radio. Today's episode was produced by Catherine Ceces and Mary Mancini. It was directed by Tasha A.F. Limley. Our fearless and chill board operator is Liv Lombardi. The masterminds behind our theme music are LaRange and Namir Blade. Special thanks to Dr. Gianne Faramond at Montgomery Bell Academy, Jimmy Hart at MTSU, Bethany Daniels at James Lawson High School. Listen back at thisisnashville.org or wherever you get good podcasts. The conversation doesn't end here. Tweet us at thisisnashville. Find us on Instagram and tell us what you want from our show by filling out our quick survey online. And remember, all our student publications are on our website if you want to hear more from these fantastic young journalists. This is Nashville. I'm LaTanya Turner. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.